Okay, let me get that big out. So I'm just going to start with, I am nervous as fuck. If you could feel me right now, I am vibrating. My name is Teresina, and I am a recovering addict. My clean date is July 22nd, 2013, and I am truly blessed and truly grateful. I'd like to start off real quick, and while we're here, is there anybody in the first 90 days of recovery? If you'd like to raise your hands, look at that. All right. I do want you to know that you truly are the most important person in this room and in this building. Right? You have something. I know that right now you probably don't feel like you have much, but I'm here to tell you, you have something. Is there anybody in their first year of recovery? There we go. 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 And I want all of you to know that you matter. And everything you fucking do matters. It matters. I know that it feels like you don't matter. And I know that it feels like this is endless. I know if there's anything that I know well, is the confusion that suffocates us so much that I can't even hardly breathe at times in that first year of recovery. And that first 90 days, that first 6 months, it took everything in me to remind myself multiple times a day, don't use no matter what. Don't use no matter how I feel. Don't use no matter how desperate I feel to get out of this pain that I am in, right? And we just don't use. And take a look around. So I've been told that I give good hugs. And so for anybody out there that is feeling a little lonely, anybody out there that's feeling scared, if you have a moment and you need a hug, I'll hug you for as long as you need, right? I'm gonna try to sit, okay? Oh shit, I forgot the time. Yeah. All right, so like I said, my name is Teresina, and I am a recovering addict. You know, I have thought over and over and over again about what I was going to say, and you know what? Nothing fucking came to mind. Nothing fucking came to mind. And I look out here, and I see all these beautiful fucking faces, and I see all these, I see it all, and I feel it, right? I feel it. And the only thing that kept coming up to my head is that you matter. This disease takes, and it takes, and it takes, and it takes, and it takes more than we have to give, and it takes from people that we love, right? I think the longest, the hardest thing for me to do was to embrace every aspect. I've been in many things in my life, many, many things, right? I've been an abused child. I've been an abusive mother. I've been an abusive daughter. I've been an abusive wife. I've been many, many things. And you know what this program has taught me today is today I'm a grateful, recovering fucking addict. And at the end of the day, and the end of every day, and as long as I go to bed with my clean time, because that clean time don't mean shit to anybody but me, right? That clean day was the day that I woke the fuck up, right? That's the day that I came alive. Well, I didn't really come alive until probably like 5 years into recovery, but... you know, that very first day, I remember like patting around, waking up, patting the ground and kind of like feeling the ground like, what the fuck, where am I at? Right? I don't have no dope. I don't have no shit. I don't know what's going on. I'm looking around. Oh fuck, I'm in rehab. Getting up and get out of the bed and trying to figure out what's that going to look like today. Right? I don't know that I had spent a time clean from the time I was 9 years old, right? So I had equipped myself to feel, use, right? I don't even know that I even understood that I had a choice in the using. I remember when someone told me, I said, you don't have to use if you don't want to. And I went, okay, let me let that sink in for a minute, right? And at the end of it, I wanted to use, right? I wanted to get high. I wanted to stop the pain so much, right? Because when I put the drugs down, I don't know about anybody else, but I was greatly reminded of why I used, right? Every day, I was reminded of the pain that I wanted to take myself out. and the desperation that I felt, and how hard it was to get that one day, how hard it was to get 2 days. That's why when I say you're in your first 90, you are in the thick of it, man. You are in the thick of it. It is hard. It is confusing. It is lonely. You know, we have one promise in, right? We have one promise, right? Is that any addict can stop using, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, right? That's three fucking parts, right? First, we got to stop using in order to lose the desire. Right? Once we lose that desire, here comes the hard fucking part, right? That new way to live, right? And I don't think we talk enough about what it feels like, right? What that feels like, that new way of living, how scary that feels, right? Because I don't know about any of you, but I came in pretty fucking angry, and I came in pretty hot, right? You couldn't tell me shit. Nothing, right? I can't even tell myself stuff. I still have a hard time following directions because Waze will say take a left and I take a right. It'll say take a right and I go straight, right? Enough times of realizing where I've gotten myself up one more time and somewhere that I didn't need to be because I just don't know how to listen, right? And it wasn't that I didn't know how to listen. I came from a place that I couldn't listen to anybody around me. Ain't nobody around me had anything that was worth fucking taking. So I figured, here I am. I built me, right? And at 36 years after I've lost everything, my children, my home, every inkling of who I thought I was going to be one day, there was. At the end, the only thing that was left was me. And half the time, I may have been the only one in the room that hadn't committed murder. And I thought, oh, well, I'm doing better than all of these guys. Never really looking at the fact of where I was, right? Where I was. Ain't nobody care about me. There wasn't anybody that even knew my first name, right? And when I got clean, I can't say that I wanted to be there. I can't say that I had walked into a pink cloud. It took me 10 months to pull my head out of my ass and take a look around and realize, hey, I'm okay, right? And, hey, for a moment, I might be able to breathe, and maybe this just might work for me, right? I came in with a lot of hate. I came in with a lot of confusion. And about 7 years clean, I really wanted to take myself out. And I really thought about it. I really entertained the idea of, because I've gone through steps, right? I'd gone through steps a couple times. I was going to meetings. I had a sponsor. I have sponsees, right? I also wasn't aware that I had a pain inside that I couldn't just figure out on my own. And so when I wanted to end it all, because it just seemed like no matter where I go, here the fuck I am, right? And I'm doing everything I can to get away from me, right? I'm doing service work. I'm, help others so you can help yourself. It gets real lonely if you don't take a look at who you are and where you're going and where you came from, right? If you don't really fully, truly embrace every part of you. I've done a lot of things in life that have been pretty shameful. I've done a lot of things in life that make me cringe. And at 7 years clean, when I decided enough was enough, but I had equipped myself with so much fucking solution that the first thought to myself was, I don't want my grandkids to have this story, right? I don't want to be that in their life. So thank God that my fuck it today looks a little bit different than 10 years ago. Right? That my fuck it today said, fuck it. I'll just go get therapy. Right? It was the one thing I was so against. Like, I'm not doing that. Right? Although I'm certifiably crazy and I'm okay with that today. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Whether it's borderline, whether it's bipolar, whether it's complex PSD, I got it all. And what that taught me is I got something. Right? I got something. In the midst of all of that, when I put all of that aside, I got something to stand on. And so do you. Right? If you've survived addiction, if you've survived abuse, if you've survived the loneliness, you got something. You got something to give. Right? Sometimes we just got to feel it to get through it. I'm about to shake this microphone right out of my hand, so I'm going to go ahead and sit and see how this goes. Can you all hear me? Okay. One thing that I've learned in the last 2 years about surviving was that I was all I was doing was just surviving. I'd taken the same skills that I had learned in all my growing up, and now I'm trying to apply them in recovery. And I didn't realize that surviving and living are two different things. I didn't know that. Sorry, ladies. I didn't know that I wasn't living. I didn't know that every choice that I made and every thought that I had came from a brokenness inside me, right? That it came from a place of not being able to receive love. I think that it's so important when I say that you matter is because you matter. Man, do you matter? And you are loved despite everything that you have ever done, despite everything that I have ever done. I am loved. I have taken everything that I've ever had in my life, and today I'm grateful. Today I'm grateful for every challenge that came my way from the time that I was little to the time that I am today. Right? That every challenge, that everything that tried to take from me, right? Because there was a lot of things and a lot of people, not just my addiction, that tried to take me, right? That tried to define who I was going to be, who was going to try to tell me what I was. Well, guess what? I got clean and I can think for myself today. When I first started going to therapy, and for anybody who hasn't had therapy, if you're scared about therapy, you can come talk to me afterwards, right? Or you can find somebody else that may have got some. They got some experience with that. I don't do a lot of talk therapy. I do what's called trauma therapy, remapping your brain, which pretty much is I got a feeling, now I'm going to redirect it another way. These rooms have given me so much. But the one thing that I didn't expect to get was a version of myself that I can live with, right? For years, I know we all got mothers, right? My beautiful mother is here today. And I'm sure I'm like everybody else and my mother. I blame my mother for everything. But then guess what? I had children of my own. And that expectation of what I thought my mother should be and what she should have given me and what she should have done. Well, now guess that's what kind of mother I am, right? And I never really looked at that if I were to take my mother aside and not be a daughter, but to look at her from human to human and sit down with this woman and listen to her story, listen to what she has to say, right? And then realize that there is never any blame to be passed around. It wasn't her fault. She was a full functioning half a functioning person when she had me, right? I was a half functioning person when I had my children. It wasn't my fault. I didn't know better. It wasn't her fault. She didn't know better. We're just trying to survive. Sometimes we forget that our mothers are just something that we pass through, and that is all learning and all lessons that we need to learn. And if you can understand that, regardless of whatever has happened to you, and I know that some of you have probably been through a lot just like me, right? And that sometimes that pain and those flashbacks and all of those stuff can get pretty daunting and pretty scary, right? Regardless of what gender we are. And that when those things start arising in my head, sometimes what I have to remember is I'm battling a ghost, and that my past is no longer present unless I allow it to be. And that my past is nothing but a ghost in the corners and back of my mind, just trying to take me out one more time, right? To make me feel as if I don't matter, as if I'm not enough. I love these rooms and I love all of you. I mean, and I mean that, right? I was not a friendly person when I came into these rooms. I would not have been said, hey, I'm good at hugs. Because I didn't hug and I didn't talk. One of the famous things that I always said when I came into these rooms, probably for the first 10 months as clean, was when people tried to fucking talk to me, like, I ain't here to make friends. And I meant that shit. I wasn't here to make friends. I didn't even know what I was doing here. I just wanted to stop using and I didn't know how to do it. So here I fucking am and I'm with all of you. And if you haven't opened up the literature, I really encourage you to open it up. If you have a problem with connection, I suggest you grab a basic text, right? Because in that, you're going to find words. I don't know, a lot of people talk about Bible, right, being the Word of God. That basic text is my Word of God. And I use it every single day. I'm fucked up in my head, I open my book. I got something going on with my wife, I open my book. I got something going on with my sponsees, I open my book. Right? Because somewhere in that is something that is going to feed me. And regardless whether I've heard it 1,000 times or I've read it 1,000 times, each event in my life, shit hits different. You know, it hits different. When it says, one of my favorite lines in the literature is, it says, it's easier to change our perspective than it is to change our reality. That hit me like a ton of bricks, and I didn't know why when I first read that. I thought, well, there's something here, and I don't know what that means, but there's something here. What I come to find out is anytime I don't feel courageous, I just change my perspective so I can live in the reality that is causing me grief. You know what I mean? And what I find today is that serves me zero, right? I can't get anywhere if I don't really take a look and find out. If I can't see myself coming, I'm going to smack right into that bitch. And if I smack right into her, it gets messy real quick. I used to be quick to temper. I'm not anymore. I'm really not anymore. And sometimes I have to remind myself that, right? Sometimes I have to remind myself, it's been a hot minute since I've been in a fight. It's been a hot minute since I've cussed somebody out at Starbucks or Kroger or chasing people down who cut me off. It's been a hot minute since I've acted out, right? I had an amazing man who was my sponsor, and his name is Sandy, and he has passed. And life's been a little bit different since he's passed. And I'm going to tell you that if you don't have a sponsor that you don't fucking love, and that you don't know, like people say, if you don't like your sponsor, that's okay. I say, fuck that. If you don't like your sponsor, I suggest you find a new one, because life is too short to be spending time with people that we don't like. They say that sponsorship is the heartbeat of this program. What the fuck is a heartbeat if it ain't gonna keep us alive, right? So I'm going to tell you, if you don't like your sponsor, don't worry about that feelings. Go find you a new sponsor, because you are the most important person in your recovery. And ain't nobody going to do it for you. And that is the one thing that my sponsor taught me, is guess what? I can't save you, but you can save you. And so I'm going to let you know, if you're looking for someone to fucking save you, you're going to fucking die. Right? That is the bottom line. Sometimes we focus so much, like I did with my mother or my father or other significant people in my life. I focus so much on waiting for them to change the way I felt so I could make peace with the shit that's going on inside me. And at the end of that, I can't ask for anybody to save me, because don't anybody know me but me, right? There ain't nobody that goes to bed with these dark thoughts, right? And there's been lots of times, especially recently, especially in the first, these last 2 years, and especially, like a year ago, that going through some things and facing some things, let me tell you, my step work because of therapy hits a lot different today than it did before. Because I ain't looking for anything else. I'm not looking for anybody. I ain't looking for my wife to change the way I feel. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do, right? But I don't like it if she asks that of me, you know? But what I know is that there were times that I was so afraid to walk through a door because I was afraid that it was going to shut behind me and that I wasn't ever going to get out. But what I have is some amazing people in my life, just like Sandy, who didn't ask. He didn't come in trying to flip on the fucking lights in my dark. He didn't try to come in and change it, right? He came in and he sat with me. And there were times that he cried with me, or there were times that he cried when I couldn't cry, right? And over a period of time, I began to realize that this man loved me. Despite me, right? Despite me, he loved me. Despite that my step work said shit like, "This ain't none of your business." I'm still waiting for someone to say, because I want to have the same response he has. I'm waiting for someone to write some shit like that, right? Because I figure it's me. Someone else is going to fucking be fucking ruthless like that. Because in the beginning, my first steps, I thought the steps were about you, not about me. I thought you were being nosy. I thought you were just trying to fucking come into my life and tell me about, you know, and start shaming me, right? So I didn't realize that step and those answers were about me. And it was about how honest can I be, right? And I love that, because what it's equipped me today is to be able to sit in the dark with someone in their pain without zero expectations other than just loving them right where they're at and letting them know that if I can do it, you can do it, right? And that times are dark and that times get rough. You know, there ain't a group of people that I love more than this group of people right here. We got more to give than just everyday folks, right? Because we've been to the brink of death, right? We have been animalistic. We know that when our literature says we couldn't live with or without drugs, right? And the without drugs is making us just as crazy as with the drugs, right? And trying to figure out, what am I supposed to do if I can't sell drugs? What am I supposed to do if I can't go make money on the streets? What am I supposed to do with this emptiness that I feel that makes me just want to lash out? Right? Well, if you take a look around, we're all in the same room and we're all in the same fucking boat. Right? And that we don't gotta like each other. Right? We're gonna find some people that we're gonna like, and if you don't like me, that's okay. Right? I've learned to like myself enough for the both of us. Right? And that took a lot, because one thing after I've done steps, and I've done steps multiple times, and the one thing that remained was the fact that I hated myself so much, I couldn't get past that. I couldn't get past the shame of my living and the shame of my past and who I was. I still got time. when I've decided that I was so sick of hating myself, I had to learn how to love myself. I'm going to tell you, that was the hardest thing I've ever fucking done. It is the hardest thing I have ever done, is when my mind tells me, you are a piece of fucking shit. Ain't nobody who raised kids like that is worth much of anything, right? And I was a good mom. I was also a really bad fucking mom, right? Women like you don't survive, right? You can't live in the real world. Who's gonna fucking, if everybody found out what you've done, ain't nobody gonna love you, right? To fight that, right? Because that's when the battle for me started, right? The battle for me started when the shitty committee started roaring. I had a silent whisper. I had a silent whisper that kept saying, I love you. I love you. I love you. Today, when the shitty midi starts a fucking going crazy like it has all morning, right? All morning I've been telling myself, you ain't got nothing to fucking say. You know, you don't got nothing. You know, who the fuck are you? Today I can bite that with, I got something, right? I got something. I've made it 9 years clean, and that shit wasn't easy, right? That shit wasn't easy, and it was sad, and it was lonely, because what people don't tell you is when you're trying to find a new way of life, you're kind of out in the middle of nothing searching for shit, right? Like, because all your, you know, everything that you've used to get through life, you can't do no more. So now you're just like, what? You know, it's kind of like, oh, now what? So I've learned one thing. And I don't know what spiritual principle this is what I tell my sponsees. I don't know what spiritual principle this is, but it works for me, and it's called shut the fuck up. And if I've learned, and if I've learned one thing that has changed my life enough, is shutting the fuck up, right? Because when I shut up, I get the beautiful gift of receiving, right? When I don't respond out of fear, out of negativity, out of self-loathing, out of disgust, whatever emotion that is deciding to run me at those moments, when I don't speak from that point of view, I provide myself some healing, right? It don't feel good. It doesn't feel good. But it is beautiful. And in time, I've learned to fill in these new shoes and this new way of life. I've learned to feel good about who I am. I've learned to be proud of the mother I am today. I've learned to be proud of the woman that gave birth to me and the father that raised me. And I'm really grateful. And I'm grateful for all of you, and I really appreciate y'all listening to me. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. My name is Kim. I'm an addict. from Dallas, man. And I am so grateful to be here. Thank you for Houston area for asking me to come out and participate in the women's rap. And I'm sitting back and I'm looking at all these faces, right? And I've just been looking around the room the whole time Terry's been sharing. And I'm humbled, right? I'm humbled by us. And I'm emotional, right? And I'm humbled because I stand up. I'm humbled because, you know, we have, we've been hated on. We've hated each other. We've hated ourselves. We've been in competition with each other. We done fucked each other's husbands. You know, we've been on the corners and we've been treated like shit. You know, we've been out there getting high with the guys and they look at us and say, what you gonna do? Damn, why I got to do something? I'm talking about our personalities was fractured and our spirits were broken. I'm talking about, as women, our conscience and our ability to love was sharply affected by drug use. I'm talking about many of us believe that we had the disease long before we picked up the dope. You know, broken. I'm humbled to stand up here in front of you guys, right? Because I was the young lady that never felt like I fit in with women. You know, I was the young lady that was bullied, was talked about, was picked on for whatever reason. And what I know the reason, what didn't have anything to do with me. It had to do with the other person. But of course, I didn't know that at the time. I'm talking about other women not liking me because of my skin color or the texture of my hair. I'm talking about growing up in the 60s. Let me just take you in the way back machine. You know, I'm 63. I got 21 years clean. So when I think about where I came from as a woman in the disease of addiction, and we said that many of us believe we had a disease long before we picked up the dope, right? So in order for me to identify with that, I need to know what the symptoms of the disease are. And what you guys have taught me is that one of the most obvious symptoms of the disease is our uncontrollable drug use, right? That's one of the most obvious symptoms of our disease. So my sponsor told me this. Let me tell you something. But this program, I came in here and I was angry, I was hurt, I was sad, I was lonely, you know. And for some reason, I wanted to live. Yeah. I wanted to live, man. I was tired of living the way that I was living, right? And I came in here and you guys told me that you got to be a student of this program. See, I don't know about you, but for me, and I know somebody, you know, I'm never the only one, you know. But my story is, I was in the bathroom with the door locked, right, looking in the mirror, crying, asking myself, what's wrong with you? Yes. Somebody can identify with that. Yes. You know, praying and begging and asking God, man, why can't, how come I can't stop living like this? It's a terrible thing when you live in a way that you don't even want to live. And I'm talking about living in that prison, you know, of addiction. You know, and doing things that make us shudder with shame when we think about it. I'm talking about not just having sex with people you don't know, but having sex with people you do know. I don't like this motherfucker. I don't even like your ass. Hurry up. I'm talking about that, right? I'm talking about, you know, living a life that you didn't want to live. You know, I'm talking about like being a mom and getting all these, going to the churches and things to get signed up for the giveaways, for the Christmas giveaways, you know, and getting all this stuff for your kids and putting it under the tree because you keep getting high. You can't afford to buy gifts because all my money go to the dope. And putting the having them all under the tree, and the kids are going to bed, and now the drug dealer is looking for a place to cut up his dope. And because you have a nice place, Kim, and you cook and you all that, you know, I never had a lot of traffic running in and out of my house. I always kept a nice house because I always had to keep up appearances. And somebody understand what I'm talking about. When I hear other people's story and then they're talking about how they were living in abandoned buildings and all that kind of stuff, that ain't my story. I had a nice place, you know, and I was still smoking crack, you know, but I kept it clean. I kept my kids clean. They got perfect attendance. They ate every day. You know, I had to keep up appearances because I was just trying to hold on to some type of normalcy. Yeah. And so the drug dealers like that, because they come over my house and do they dope in peace, right? Yeah. And they come over Christmas to cut up their stuff, and I'm smoking. Now everything is gone. And guess what happens next? And then the kids wake up the next day and they're brokenhearted because they're saying, oh, Mama, wake up. Knowing I wasn't asleep, I was just acting like I was asleep. I'm talking about that feeling. That feeling that you know you fucked up. You fucked up. And you couldn't fucking help it. You couldn't fucking help it. And you had to lie to him. Oh my God, somebody must have broke in. And then toast the, oh my God, and you're going to pretend to cry like, you know, knowing. Man, I'm talking about the stuff that we've gone through as women. This is what I'm talking about. This is what the women's rap is about. Can we talk as women? You know, so I remember like growing up in the 60s, right? And I didn't grow up in a loving family. You know, and we were talking about, we heard somebody talking about it earlier today, you know, one of the people that was sharing, you know, I was like, getting information from misinformed people. Like in a house with people that didn't even know how to love. I wanted love, but their love wasn't there. Why was love there? Because they didn't get the love. You know, I'm talking about generational, not generational wealth, but generational curses. Then with the generational curse, and just all I want was for my mama just to hug me and love me and tell me that she cared about me. You know, all I wanted was for her to listen to me. Can I tell you what I'm feeling? Can I tell you what I'm thinking? And she said, don't nobody go on out of here with that. And I had older sisters. Can I hang out with y'all? Can I go with y'all? No, we don't want you to go. How come I can't go? Like the constant rejection. And I'm telling you, the constant rejection from the women that were supposed to be the closest to me. So when I heard, you know, it's like so many of us got these things in common. So it's like, if they didn't love me, how you gonna love me? What you mean you gonna love me till you, we gonna love you till you learn to love yourself? Man, bitch, fuck you. Like, I believe that bullshit. You know, hell, they don't even love me. You don't even know me. What you mean you gonna love me till I learn to love myself? How you gonna tell me I don't love myself? And a fight went with it. Like, that was love, right? Man, coming in broken. Coming in, I'm talking about like my first 6 months. I came down to stay, let me back up a little bit. I came down and to stay with my sister. My daughter, Moda's daughter, had got a basketball scholarship here. I'm from the Cincinnati area. And so I came here to get clean. You know, I had got to a point that I had lost everything. We found my brother dead. He had OD'd and had his body. We found his body like 3 weeks later. He was decomposed. It was, you know, just knowing that I was going to die just like him. But, you know, we talk about that there's something in our self-destructive personality that cries for failure, right? I need to always remember there's something else there. See, that's not the only thing that's in me. See, it tells us in our literature, it tells us, Kim, spiritual principles don't make you spiritual. You were born that way.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So while there's something in my self-destructive personality that cries for failure, there's also a spirit in me that cries for success. And so I need to recognize them both. This is why we talk about that we were at least two people, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Some people don't get it. They think it's a joke. Well, I was five, six people. Now, bitch, you ain't... Because they just want, you know, people do that because they want the attention. I need to out. That's what I'm talking about, the competition that we have, sponsor. How we start competing with each other. Well, you was two people. Girl, I was five. Like that. What the fuck? You know? So why don't we just stick with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Why don't we just stay right there? What do you mean, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? Well, look at Dr. Jekyll. Look at who Dr. Jekyll was. Look at what they're telling you in the literature. Understand the literature. Dr. Jekyll was a doctor. He cured people. He was loving and caring. He wanted to fix people and help people. He was the doctor, right? Mr. Hyde, complete opposite. Slit your throat and don't give a fuck about it. I don't care. I will kill you and your mama and your baby. And... walk with the footprints in the blood. I don't care. You understand what I'm saying? This is who I am. This is what we call humility. Except my assets and my liabilities. So I got to understand what I'm being taught here. Right? So all of this is within me. Right? So when I come in here and y'all start teaching me about the disease of addiction. See, I need to be educated because I thought coming in that I had a drug problem. And sponsor said, well, baby, we know drugs brought you to the rooms. This is Narcotics Anonymous. People don't just volunteer to come in here, right? So we know drugs brought you here. Either you came voluntarily because of sheer desperation, you wanted something new, or you came in here because you had to get your paper signed or something. Court sent you in here, or you came in here because you're trying to hold on to some kind of relationship, so you're putting on a front. You know, but we know drugs brought you in here. Question is, what took you to the dope? Yeah. I'm talking about sponsors are very smart people. See, I need to come in and be a student. I don't need to come in here trying to tell a sponsor how to sponsor me. If I got a sponsor that's coming in trying to tell me to sponsor, I'm like, bitch, I don't do that. I don't do that. You asked me to sponsor you, and I'm going to sponsor you. If you think you know more than I do in that area, you're welcome. The door's open, you know. And I'll be right here in the same place. If you ever decide to come back, the door is open, the unlocked, and the light is on. But this is what we're not going to do. And I do that because this is what I had to do. I know it works. We share our experience, our strength, and our hope, right? So sponsor said, so we know drugs brought you to the rooms. Kim, what took you to the dope? And when I'm looking at it, and I'm going in my way back machine, I go all the way back to the 60s, right? And I'm looking at Little Kim, right? And Little Kim was very sad, and you know, and I'm wondering, well, what's wrong with her? Why didn't you ever smile as a kid? Like, what was going on with you that you were so unhappy? And when I looked at it, right, and I'm talking about step work, when I'm looking at what happened, it was like I was never accepted. Like I was rejected. I was rejected by my family members, right? I was rejected when I went to church because mama said, you know, we're going to go to church and that's God's house and God loves you, blah, blah, blah. And we go to church and we walked in church. I'm telling you, I grew up in a Catholic church, right? And when I went in, you know, they said the only way God is going to listen to you, little black girl, is if you go in that closet, pull back that black curtain and talk to the hole in the wall to that old white man that's on the other side. I'm talking about the 60s. Y'all stay with me. Don't. Look. Keep up. This is what I'm telling you as a little girl. So what I'm thinking is God doesn't love me because I'm a little black kid. Because we go to church and we get called nigga in church. You know, had little kids sticking their tongues out at us. I'm talking about growing up in the 60s in Ohio. This is my story. Right? Then I would go to school on the other side of the track where we lived, right? And when I go to school, I go in, and remember back then, we had no weave. We had no fake eyelashes. Ain't had no contact lenses. Didn't have no tanning salons. We ain't have none of that. So when I walked in, when I'm in school, what I got talked about was that, oh, white girl, you got white people's hair. Just constantly tearing me down like I was never good enough. Oh, you think you cute. Look at, she thinks she cute. We don't do her. And being treated like that. And being bullied over and over again, right? And I'm not talking about, I hope y'all understand what I'm saying. Look at my story. I'm not talking about being bullied by men. I'm talking about being bullied by the women in my life. So by the time I went through my addiction, right? And we were in competition out there. In the streets, we're in competition. You know, I remember even, you know, having the low. I'm talking about what took you to the dope, Kim, was feelings of inadequacy. What took you to the dope, Kim, was feelings of self-loathing and self-hatred and self-pity. This is what took you to the dope, Kim. How do you know? Because I knew drugs was a bad idea, and I said yes anyway. And I know I ain't the only one. There was something that Dr. Jekyll said. They said, here, try this. Dr. Jekyll said, girl, you don't want to do that. That's not, you don't want to do that, right? And Mr. Hyde said, bitch, if you don't do it, they ain't going to like you. And you already know you want to fit in. So just go ahead and go along with the crowd so they will like you. I'm telling you, I'm talking about like almost all my decisions that I made in my life were based in low self-esteem. I know I ain't the only one. I'm talking about smoking cigarettes because I wanted to fit in. I'm talking about doing drugs because I wanted to fit in. I'm talking about having sex because I wanted to fit in. Everybody, I didn't want to have sex. I just wanted to be a part of the cool crew. I wanted to fit in with those girls. You know, they was having sex, so I wouldn't grab this guy. Come on, let's go do this, right? And I wouldn't. And I didn't like it. I don't know about you, but I did not like sex when I had sex. It was like the most disgusting thing that, ew, get off of me. Ew, that's how I felt. And then he kept following me around and shit, what the fuck wrong with you, girl? following me. Shit, 50 years later, niggas still following. I'm talking about having children out of low self-esteem. My children were not born because I loved him and we made plans and we had a college fund set up and we made all this and we're going to have a baby. Let's try to have a baby. No, I laid down and I had unprotected sex because low self-esteem would not let me tell him to put a condom on. I just wanted to be loved. I just wanted to be liked. I'm not going to tell him to stop and put a condom on. If you love me, Kim, you'll do it. And all I wanted was to fit in. All I wanted was to be loved, man. And that's what I did. And I remember getting pregnant. My children were not born in love. The fuck? Who does that shit? You know, them people. So when I got pregnant, my thought was, I'm going to have this baby because a kid, babies will love you unconditionally for the rest of your life. So my children were born with a job to do. Bitch, your job is to love me unconditionally. I'm talking about the damage that I did to my children go all the way back to the day they were conceived. I'm talking about looking at the whole picture, the whole thing, right? So I come into the fellowship. I'm broken. I'm miserable. I don't know what to do. My life is so messed up. But Dr. Jekyll said, try one more time. Come on, you can do this. Because I'm telling you, by then I had been to psychiatrists. I've switched religions. I've relocated. I blame the white people. I blame the courts. I blame the men. I blame mama and them. Because I'm trying to figure out what the hell is going on with me. So it got to be, what's wrong? It's just them people that you around. So I started going to meetings, you know, in Narcotics Anonymous. And when I went to my first meeting, I wasn't ready to stop using because I didn't think I had a problem. Because I still got my house, I still got my cars, you know, I still got my business, money is good, kids is acting right, everything is really, really good. I just smoke crack on the weekends when he bring it on. But I still go to work on Monday. So I didn't think I had a problem. I didn't know anything about the disease of addiction and how it is progressive. So y'all know what happened. The business went, the cars went, the house, everything went, right? And with two more kids, right? All this is happening, you know. And I said, well, I just need to relocate. And when I went to a meeting, y'all said, dude, we suggest you do 90 meetings in 90 days. We suggest you get a sponsor and work the steps with a sponsor. You got to change people, places, and things. Don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle happens. I was hearing all this stuff, right? You know, and so I didn't do it. I moved back home to get away from him, to start over again, and the disease of addiction was progressive. I stayed clean for a couple of weeks, and I thought I was cured. So I said, you could just do one. Just go ahead. Won't nobody know. And that one is too many. Turned into 1,000. By the time I reached this 1,000, now I'm seeing aliens. Y'all laughing at identification, right? Okay, just checking. I was seeing demons. I don't know about anybody else. I can only tell my story. But it was something that I knew that I was in hell on earth. I'm talking about scared to death, like I could see the freaking demons. And I know I'm losing my mind. You that close. What you need to do? Shit, I need to go rehab. So check myself into rehab. I go to rehab, and they says, alcohol's a drug. I said, oh, hell no. You got me fucked up. I believe all that other stuff y'all saying, but that don't make no sense. How is alcohol, the drugs are illegal. Alcohol is sold in the grocery store next to the milk. The hell is y'all talking about? It's in the, you know, it's like, y'all make no sense. I didn't know it was my reaction to the substance. Drugs don't make you an addict. It's your reaction to the drugs that make you an addict. I wanted to be normal, only to find out I couldn't. I'm not normal. I have the disease of addiction. So I went on, and life went on, and finally, Dr. Jekyll said, "Well, want to try it again?" Because Mr. Hyde been kicking your ass. You tired yet? I said, "Okay, let's try it again." And this time, that's when I ended up in Texas. And my clean date is March 27, 2001. My recovery has not been easy. I hear people talk about the pink cloud. I've never seen it. So for those of you who have seen the pink cloud, I'm happy for you. I ain't never seen that shit. They said, your first year's a gift. From who? Who giving out these gifts? I had to work every single newcomer. Newcomer. I had to work every single day to stay clean. So sometimes I hear this stuff in the rooms. For me, it's just like, man, that's such bullshit. Quit telling people that. Your first year is a gift. From who? I don't know about you. Right? But I had to work every day not to get high. Yeah. I'm talking about I went to go stay at my sister in Dallas when I moved here. She said, you can stay with me till you get on your feet, only to go in and find out they was using. And I remember what you guys said, y'all had planted the seeds. I'm talking about how important it is to plant the seeds, because you don't know when they're going to grow. Right? You don't know who's going to get it. But I'm sitting there in the living room, just got off the Greyhound bus. I don't have no money, no clothes, no nothing. Just me and my two little girls. The other one's in college, right? I had two little girls, ages 8 and 10. And I'm sitting there, smoke everywhere. And I'm fucked up. Damn, I don't want to get high no more. Tired of living like this, man. Y'all, somebody know what I'm talking about. And they said, and they was all happy. Hey, Amy, how you doing? Come on in. I'm like, oh, man. I said, can y'all not get high in front of me? Because I'm really trying to make it. They said, bitch. Because you know they was high. They was high. They was high. They said, bitch, it's my house. You're welcome to stay. We're going to give you a bedroom and everything. You and your kids. But what you ain't going to do is come in here and try to tell us what to do. Tony. I just want to live. I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm trying to fucking survive. I'm dying, and I know this thing is going to kill me just like it killed our brother. And they said, well, you're welcome to stay. You don't like it. They said, get the fuck out. And they passed it. And they looking at me for a reaction. And I said, okay, I'll leave. Bravest thing I've ever done in my entire life is I grabbed the hands of my two little girls and I left out of there because I had made a decision to be homeless. Y'all don't understand what I'm saying. I made a decision to be homeless. I would rather be homeless and sleep under the bridge and give myself a chance to do what these people, Narcotics Anonymous, telling me to do than to be around y'all and get high again, because I'm not going to make it, man. I'm not going to make it. In my first 6 months, I was homeless with my kids. Look, if you want what we have to offer and you're willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready. Some of y'all want what we have, but your ass ain't willing. That part. Because when you willing, when the willingness hits you, you stop asking them dumb ass questions like, why I got to get a sponsor? Why I got to tell a woman my business? Why I got to go to meetings every day? Why? You stop asking. When you willing, you stop asking them dumb ass questions. Yo, questions will change. You be starting like, how do I do this? What do I need to do? So what you say? You're questioning telling you. Yeah, where you going? Can I go? Your questions will change. So I came in, I got a sponsor, started working the steps. I started doing the work that I needed to do to find it. Because I don't know about you, but I really knew that I was a winner. There was always something in me that told me, you better than that. You better than that. Hold your head up and live your life so you can beat this thing, right? And so I started doing the work, man. I started doing service work. She said, you want to stay clean? Do service work. Get involved. Get involved in your home group. Make this your home, right? Because you got to get plugged in. And so I'm starting to do the work, and I'm getting plugged in. I'm working with my sponsor. I'm doing all of this stuff. And then something happened. This guy came to me, and he said, hey, excuse me, but my friend want to know if you would sponsor her. I said, get right back with you. What? What? As I go talk to my sponsor, I said, I thought they said you got to have like, have work all 12 steps before you sponsor. She said, no, you just need to stay ahead of your sponsees. She said, go ahead and tell that lady yes, and you do the work. Because she's going to motivate you to stay ahead of her. Right. And so that's what I did. So I've been sponsoring women for over 20 years, right? So what I'm finding in my step work, when I'm looking at what's going on with me, and remember, I'm still dealing with this little girl, this broken little girl. Because see, we don't heal overnight. This don't happen overnight. So I got to keep doing this step work. And what I'm finding out, I remember a vital question that my sponsor asked me, right? She said, Kim, what, matter of fact, it was my grand sponsor. She said to me, Kim, what is your greatest fear? And she said, hold up, don't answer that right away. I need you to meditate on that and get back with me. Go to a quiet place. I need you to meditate on what is your greatest fear. And when I did, I went back to her with my answer. And my answer was that I would never know what love feels like. I've never been loved. Mama didn't love me. My sisters and them didn't love me. My so-called boyfriends, they didn't love me. They said they loved me, but they didn't, right? The women that I ran across, they didn't love me, you know. So I don't think that's my greatest fear, is that I would never know what love feels like. And she said, okay. So we started doing some work in that area, the area of love. And what I had to take a look at was in the fourth step. I just heard my brother talk about the fourth step, right? It said, Kim, you settled for sex when you really wanted love. And that opened the door for me, because I really do. That's what you want. Is that what you want? Yeah, that's what I want. I want to be loved. Well, let me point something out to you, little girl, right? She said, you want love. The men you were with, they wanted sex. And you were busy giving them what they wanted, thinking that you was going to get what you wanted. But that's not what happened. They got what they wanted, and then they went on to the next one to get some more. And you still left there feeling loveless, right? And so I said, girl, yeah, all men are dogs, man. They all cheat. She said, hold up, wait a minute. Ooh, I love sponsorship. Hold up, wait a minute. All men are not dogs? Was your daddy a dog? And my father was not. My father, they was married to my mom for 70 years and never cheated. And I say that with confidence, because I come from a small town. Everybody know everybody. And I was the bartender at the Elks Club. Everybody know everybody, and they get drunk and talk, right? Not one rumor ever, right? And I believe that. So I held on that all men are not dogs, because my daddy wasn't one, right? And so she said, okay, well, then who's the matter with you? So if the men are not dogs, who dogging you? She said, who's the matter with you? We switched from what's the matter with you, because we know the disease, to who's the matter with you. So you are your problem. And I'm like, well, you know, those married men that I was with, and I know I ain't the only one. So I say it boldly. I would tell the wife, well, if you was taking care of business at home, your husband wouldn't be with me. Who else said that? Okay, y'all ain't got to say nothing. Look at all the hands. Yeah, if you were taking care of business, and sponsor said, well, you know why he was with you, Kim? Yeah, because she said, no, because your legs was open. Stop settling for sex when you really want love. So how do you do that? She said, I'm going to take you to the 11th step. Go to 11th step. page 112, in It Works and How and Why. Also on page 112 in the Step Working Guide. And it says that, Kim, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be in a romantic relationship. Don't beat yourself up because you want love. And so many people are scared to say it. They act like, I don't care. But really, let's go deep down inside and ask ourselves, what do you really want? Right? So for me, I really want to be loved, right? And I really want to be loved by that man. I want my own. I don't want somebody else's. I want somebody who admires me and appreciates me and loves me, ain't asking me for nothing. He can laugh at my corny jokes, and when I sit back and I get mad and I start pouting, he start laughing. You know, I just want somebody who accept me just the way I am, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I want him to be loved, fully loved, right? She said, okay, there's nothing wrong with that provided you're spiritually motivated. And I'm like, wait a minute, I ain't never heard no shit like this before. How do you be spiritually motivated to be in a romantic relationship? That, you know, for me, it was like, it didn't make any sense, right? It didn't make any more sense than when y'all told me surrender to win. That didn't make sense either. But I kept coming, I got to understand, right? So when she said, how do you do that? She said, well, let's look at the ways that motivate you to be with a man. This is what the work is about. It's about learning how to do self-love. Like, it's about learning about self, right? So how am I usually motivated to be with a man physically? I look good, you look good, we look good together, right? He was just talking about another thing. The feelings come up, no butterflies in my stomach and everything. And in other words, I get horny, right? And we like each other, so I'm motivated by sex, right? Or I have been motivated financially. I look at what you're driving, where you work, the shoes you wear. I'm checking out your watch. I'm looking at the way your hair is, your heck. I'm looking at, ooh, I can tell if you got money. So I'm looking at all this kind of stuff, right? I'm checking you out, and now I want to be with you. Because why? Because you look like a come up. And I'm still in prostitution mode. I'm still in prostitution mode. I'm looking to get paid. Right? Another way I've been motivated to be with a man is emotionally. What I mean by that is I need you to fix me. I need you to fix my pain. The best way to get over one man is to get under another. So this is this is my history. This is how I've been motivated to be with a man. She said, if you want to be spiritually motivated, cut out those other three. So I started working on myself. She said, close your legs. Yeah. She said, the only thing that ever worked for us is total abstinence. Hey. So if you want to find love, close your legs and practice total abstinence in that area, Kim. Oh, wait a minute. You telling me not to have sex? She said, I'm telling you, if you want love, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm telling you, if you want love, you're going to have to do something different than what you've been doing. So I decided 13 years ago to close my legs, and I haven't opened them to a man since. Now hold on, wait a minute. ain't been no bottle of cherries, and none, it ain't been easy. It's been just like putting the dope down. So I have urges. I wanna go get high, and when I wanna go use today, my using doesn't look like crack. Today my using looks like dick. I want to feel good. I want to get with that. I know what that feels. I just want one. Just today, right? And then I had to play the tape all the way out and understand what you're going to get, when, how you're going to feel after that. So the same principles I use to stay clean one day at a time and get 21 years clean, I use the same principles in order to live in dignity, to live with self-respect. To learn how to love myself. So in the 12 years prior to meeting, I met somebody, right? But in the 12 years prior and I continue to work on myself. Let me tell you something. I just didn't put the dick down. I put the dick down and pick the books up. I started working on myself. I started taking myself out. I kept dating. Don't get me wrong. I'm not man-hating. I love men, and I don't do women, so don't get it twisted. So I'm strictly dickly. So I sat back, and I go out with men. I go on dates, and I'm listening to you now. You hear what I'm saying? I'm paying attention, because while you've already chosen me, the choice is mine to make. Y'all told me that. I don't wait to get chosen. You're going to choose me. Men always choose you, Kim. So they're going to choose you now. How about you choose you? Now you start making some good decisions for yourself. So when I start hearing things that they say, I'm paying attention to your mannerisms. I'm watching how you treat the waitress. I'm listening to what you're talking about. I want to know if you open the door for me. I want to know certain little things. I want to hear, are you taking care of your kids? I want certain things I want to hear. I'm listening. I'm paying freaking attention to you. And what happens is that you disqualify yourself. Because I asked myself, is that somebody? Because this is all that and a bag of chips. And I know who I am, right? I'm a woman with dignity. I know I'm a prize, right? So I need to ask myself, is that somebody? You want that to climb on top of you and put that thing inside of you? Ew, no. Why? Because I love sex. One is too many, a thousand is never enough. It ain't nothing worse than having a sex shit with somebody you don't even like. You know what I'm talking about? Like you have sex with somebody, sex is real good. 3 months later, Tony, you don't even like him. Like, this motherfucker. Good. Like, just shut up. Shut up. Why is you talking? Why is you talking? You know, so it's like learning how to like deny myself instant gratification and stay on the path of recovery in that area, man. And I need to tell y'all, after 12 years of practicing this program in that area and love and learning how to love myself, what happened was that I met him. When I worked on me, he showed up. And let me tell you, water seeks its own level, right? So now I'm in this relationship, a long-distance relationship with somebody that I absolutely love, I respect, I admire, same thing here. And guess what? We ain't never touched each other. How can you love some? How can you love a man or fall in love with a man that you ain't never touched before? I have. I share my experience, strength, and hope. So I stand here today and I just want to give ladies the hope shot, man. You know, that you can get better too. You don't have to be the doormat anymore. You ain't got to settle for less anymore. You can be all that God created you to be. Thank you for letting me share.